coins and stamps. I'd looked it up in the library. Before I handed them over, I took one last look at the pennies. I held them to my cheek and kissed them goodbye.
"I'm going to miss you guys," I whispered.
The next day, Hank returned with $312. I sucked in a breath as he handed me the crisp bills.
"Here you are," he said when he handed me the last of the bills. "Now, go win a motel."
"I will," I said with a grin. Our luck was going to change soon. I could feel it in my bones. As the honeycomb sun dipped lower into the sky, I sat hunched over at the front desk and wrote my story. If I Owned a Motel by Mia Tang. If I owned a motel, I would treat every customer like family. I would bring all guests an extra blanket or a hot water bottle if they were cold. I would make them a cup of tea if they were having a bad day. And I would get it out of them what happened. Because sometimes terrible things happen, but there's nothing more terrible than not having anybody to tell it to. Then, after they tell me, I would try to help them. Sometimes problems seem humongous in your head, but if you tell someone, you'd be surprised what can happen. After we've solved it, we can celebrate together by playing Monopoly after dinner or jumping into the pool together. Life's short, and it's important to celebrate the good stuff when it happens. I would also protect myself and my customers by putting in a security camera, bulletproof glass inside the front office, and a gate so cars can't get stolen. I would charge customers $20 per night for a room, but give them a discount if they were weekly because the weeklies have been living there for a long, long time, and that's a lot to pay every day. If I win your motel, I promise to always treat it with love, kindness, and respect. Your motel won't just be a business to me. It will be home. Hank came into the front desk just as I was finishing my essay. I handed it to him. "What do you think?" I asked him when he was done reading.
"It's wonderful," he said. "Just wonderful."
"Is the grammar okay? Do you think I should add anything?" I asked.
"I wouldn't change a thing," Hank said.
His steady eyes looked straight into mine, and years of doubt melted away. "So this is it then," I said. "I should just mail it?" Hank reached down, dug out a card from his back pocket, and handed it to me. It was Lupe's comment card, the one that said, "You can't win if you don't play." I smiled. The next day, I mailed in my essay. Chapter 54. At school that day, we had a substitute. Ms. Morgan had big, thick glasses. Whereas Mrs. Douglas was chatty and loud, Ms. Morgan was soft-spoken and cautious.
"It's only my second time teaching," she explained to us.
Some of the other kids, when they heard this, immediately started chatting, talking right over Ms. Morgan, even when she clapped her hands two short times and then three long times, which was our class sign to pay attention.
"Really, guys, I must insist you pay attention," Ms. Morgan said quietly,
which prompted Jason to cup his ear and ask,
"What did you say?"
The other kids thought this was really funny and burst out laughing. Jason was delighted. For the next half an hour, whenever Ms. Morgan said anything, Jason would blurt out,
"Huh? What did you say?"
I kicked Jason repeatedly under my seat to knock it off, but he ignored me. By lunchtime, Ms. Morgan had lost all control of the class. Now kids were openly raising their hands and saying,
"Ms. Mousy, I mean, Ms. Morgan, I have a question,"
then covering their mouths as they disintegrated into nonstop giggling. As we filed out one by one for lunch, Ms. Morgan crumbled into her chair. I went back to the classroom during lunch to grab a copy of my story for the essay contest so that I could show Lupe. As I was about to walk in, though, I heard sniffling. Ms. Morgan was on the phone. I snuck a peek. Her glasses were on her desk, and she was rubbing her eyes.
"I'm just not cut out for this," she said on the phone. "You don't know what it's like, Wilma. The kids hate me."
I immediately froze. I backed up against the wall, next to the open door. I dared not move, afraid that Ms. Morgan might hear me and know that I'd heard. She'd be so embarrassed.
"Maybe I just don't have what it takes to be a real teacher," she said, weeping into the phone.
The lunch bell rang, and Ms. Morgan quickly got off the phone. I waited until some other students filed in first before slipping in, too. As soon as class resumed, Jason started doing the thing with his ear again. "Huh? I really can't hear you. This isn't a church," he shrieked.
The other kids laughed again. Jason looked around the room, very pleased with himself.
"And you don't look like a nun," he added.
Another monstrous wave of laughs. Ms. Morgan looked like she was about to cry.
"Can I talk to you?"
I asked Jason. Jason looked at me like I just asked him if he wanted to do the foxtrot.
No,
Jason said. I raised my hand.
"Ms. Morgan, I just remembered. Jason and I need to go to the gym and tell Mr. Henkin, the PE teacher, which kids are absent today," I lied.
"Can't we just call him?"
Ms. Morgan asked, picking up the phone.
"No," I said. "He's out on the field."
"No, he's not,"
Jason protested, but I kicked him hard under the seat and he shut up. Ms. Morgan nodded and said we could go. When we got outside, I turned to Jason.
"What are you doing?"
I asked him.
"What do you mean?"
"Why are you giving Ms. Morgan a hard time?" I said.
"You mean Ms. Mousy?"
He laughed.
"It's not funny," I said.
"Seems pretty funny to everyone else."
"Well, I'm not everyone else," I said, "and neither's Ms. Morgan. Did you know I overheard her talking to her friend on the phone? And she said she didn't know if she had what it took to be a real teacher. And she was crying."
"So?"
Jason snapped, in the tone that reminded me so much of his father. I wanted to throw my hands up and walk away. But I didn't walk away. Instead, I said very softly,
"You don't have to do this."
"Do what?" he asked.
I looked into his eyes. "You don't have to be your father," I said. Jason didn't say anything back. He just turned and walked back into the classroom. He didn't say a word to me the rest of the day. But he didn't make fun of Ms. Morgan again. I didn't expect to see Jason again after school, but later that day, he showed up at the motel. Mr. Yao's car roared into the motel around sunset with Jason in the passenger seat. I immediately tossed the baseball cap onto the front desk. Then I froze. Two Chinese immigrants had come about an hour ago. I had put them in room 6.
They're here. Chinese visitors were here.
And so was Mr. Yao. Frantically, I ran out the back door as Mr. Yao and Jason were getting out of their car.
"Mom! Dad!"
I yelled, racing up the stairs.
"Mom, Dad, what?"
Mr. Yao asked. At the sound of Mr. Yao's voice, my parents rushed out of the room. My mom glanced at me and over at room 6.
We weren't expecting you, Mr. Yao," she said.
Mr. Yao didn't even look up at my mom. He turned his attention instead to the rooms, which, now that it was getting dark outside, were starting to light up, one by one.
"You know, I've been hearing this disgusting little rumor about a motel that's been hiding Chinese immigrants in the rooms," he said.
My dad laughed nervously.
Where did you hear that?" he asked. "That's crazy." "That's what I said. Not only is it crazy, but stupid. Whoever's stupid enough to do a thing like that is bound to get caught. And when they do, they will never work in this country again. Never!"
The entire time he talked, he didn't take his eyes off the rooms. When all the rooms were lit up, he reached into his pocket, pulled out a pen and piece of paper, and started jotting down room numbers. And that's when I knew we were doomed. Room 6 did not have a registration card.
"Come down," Mr. Yao said to my parents. "Let's take a little walk over to the front desk together, shall we?"
My parents descended the stairs. The sweat stains on my father's shirt stretched and spread. I lingered behind. If I could just warn the immigrants in room 6, maybe they could slip out or hide.
"Mia!"
Mr. Yao yelled. I jumped. It was the first time Mr. Yao ever called me by my name.
"Yes?"
I asked.
"Stay where I can see you," he hissed. "We're all going to the front desk together, and if the numbers on my list don't match the registration cards, there will be hell to pay!"
In the front office, Mr. Yao picked up the stack of registration cards and started flinging them onto the table one by one as he cross-referenced them with his list. When at last he came to room 6 and saw there were no registration cards, he pounded the table with his hand.
"Are you hiding immigrants in my motel?"
he screamed at my dad.
"Is that what you're doing? Look at me when I'm talking to you."
My dad lifted his eyes inch by inch. "No, sir," my dad denied.
"Don't lie to me. I was born at night, but not last night."
Mr. Yao was standing so close to him, his angry words fell like spittle on my dad.
"I'm going to give you one last chance to tell me just who the hell is in room 6,
he said in a low voice.
"I don't know, sir," my dad said.
"You don't know?"
Mr. Yao asked.
"Are you saying some people just snuck in and started sleeping there? Because if that's the case, I will call the cops right now."
His threat cut into us like glass. My mom and I looked at each other. Mr. Yao was making my dad choose between his job and his friends, and we both knew which my dad would choose. There was no way my dad would throw the people in room 6 under the bus. Not in a million years. As he opened his mouth to confess, I jumped in.
"You must have gotten the number wrong. There's no one in there," I said.
"We'll just see about that," Mr. Yao growled.
As he lifted the front desk divider to go outside, a car pulled into the motel. Mr. Yao stopped for a minute to see who it was. The girl with the jeans stepped out of the car. She'd come back with her mom. My blood curdled when I saw her. I looked down at my jeans, her jeans, as the girl and her mom stepped into the front office.
"Mother, look!" she pointed at my jeans. "Those are mine! You stole my jeans!"
All around me, eyes narrowed. Her eyes, Mr. Yao's eyes, her mother's eyes. I looked down at my jeans and up at her. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. So I lied.
"These are mine," I said.
Mr. Yao's mouth curled into a tight smile as he put his stack of registration cards down and turned his full attention to the girl. Sweat dripped down my spine, even as the front office air conditioner blasted on me.
"Is it true? Did you steal this girl's pants?"
Mr. Yao asked, not even looking at me. I squirmed in the jeans, the hard fabric digging into my flesh.
"No,
I struggled to speak. My throat felt like sand.
"I didn't. I don't steal, I swear."
"Liar," the girl said. Jason looked away. I followed his gaze out the window to my parents, who had tiptoed out of the back and were now standing in front of room 6. I quickly looked over at Mr. Yao, but he was too busy gawking at me like I was a criminal to notice where my parents had gone.
"Of course you stole them," Mr. Yao said. "You're a thief. That's probably what you were doing at Macy's, too, when my wife saw you."
"It was not!"
I glared at him. I resented the way he looked at me, like he knew me so well, when in fact he knew nothing about me.
"I don't steal," I repeated.
"You're saying these are your jeans?"
"Yes,"
I insisted, with as much conviction as I could muster. The girl pointed at the jeans.
"Show us the label then," she said.
She turned to Mr. Yao and added,
"My name's written in permanent marker on the label."
Ugh, I knew I should have cut off the label.
"Do it or I'll do it," Mr. Yao commanded.
He took a step toward me. Before he could dig his gross fingers into my jeans, I reached behind, squeezed my eyes shut, and pulled out the label. There, in all bold, shouty caps, was the name Polly, written in permanent marker.
"Take them off," Mr. Yao barked at me. "Now."
Polly smirked. She was clearly enjoying this. Mr. Yao pointed to the manager's quarters.
"Go,"
he said. I limped into my room and quietly closed the door. The jeans felt hot to my touch. I peeled them off like bark, stomping on them on the cold floor in my socks. Tears pooled at the base of my eyes as I stared at the jeans. Hours ago, my friend, my pride, and now my shame. I got out my ugly floral pants and put them back on. Fear pressed me forward, the fear that if I didn't emerge from my room, they'd come barging in.
Here, I said, handing the jeans back to the girl. I didn't apologize, nor did I cry. I refused to give Mr. Yao the satisfaction.
Chapter 55.
I thought the whole point of having customers fill in their address was so you could mail them their stuff back in case they left it behind, Mr. Yao said after the girl and her mom left. Wasn't that your idea?
I couldn't speak. The humiliation had burned a hole in my tongue. I vowed never to talk to him again. My parents slipped back in through the back door and joined us.
Where'd you guys go? Mr. Yao asked. You guys missed the whole thing.
In all his excitement over the jeans, he had completely forgotten about the immigrants in room 6. I looked up at my mom and could tell from her face that they were safe. My mom would never know the price I paid for their safety. Jason knew. The whole time his dad was interrogating me, he had been looking out the window. He saw my parents knock on room 6's door. He saw them sneak the immigrants out of their rooms and out the back. He saw the whole thing. But he never said anything.
Dear Jason, thank you for not saying anything to your dad. I don't know why, but you didn't. Maybe you're not so bad after all. Your classmate, Mia.
I stared at the last part. Maybe you're not so bad after all.
My grandmother used to say that people don't change. Our heart is like a rubber band. It might stretch a little, but eventually it snaps right back. I'm not sure if I believed that. Part of me did. We were talking about Jason here, the same kid who took my pencil and licked it. The other part of me, though, wondered. There used to be a time when I let my cousins walk all over me. They were all boys, and I was the only girl, and in China, girls are kind of like spare tires. It's nice if you have one, but they're not important. Even my grandmother, whom I loved and missed so much, believed this. She believed it like she believed the sky was blue, like it was a fact. Girls were just not as useful as boys. She never came out and said this, of course, but she'd have little ways of showing it, like always putting the best dishes in front of my cousins at family dinners and not me. She'd pat their heads and tell them to eat up before the dish got cold, and I'd watch as they snatched and grabbed the food with their greedy chopsticks until there were hardly any more pieces of chicken left for me, only burnt onions. One day, I picked up my chopsticks and started grabbing back. I snagged chicken, shrimp, whatever I could pick up with my chopsticks, and hoarded it all in my mouth.
Hey, Shen complained. Not fair.
We weren't close then, and I narrowed my eyes at him. As I picked up my chopsticks to reach for more food, Shen blocked my chopsticks with his. Our chopsticks collided like swords. The two of us held them in position, neither willing to back down. It went on like this the next night, and the night after that. Eventually, our chopsticks war got so bad, my grandmother had to use her own chopsticks to draw a line in the food and declare one side mine and the other side Shen's. From then on, every dish had a line. I remember countless birthdays, Chinese New Year, everything had a line. Then one day I looked down and the line was gone. My grandmother had forgotten to draw it. I waited for Shen to take the first piece of chicken and he waited for me. Neither of us grabbed, neither of us hoarded. Somehow, we'd gone from food enemies to friends. Neither of us knew when it had happened. We just knew we no longer needed the line. I thought about that and how maybe people do change, as I thought about Jason. I didn't end up giving the letter to Jason. I was going to, but for some reason, I just didn't. You know how sometimes you raise your hand, but when the teacher finally calls on you, you pretend you were only tucking your hair? It was kind of like that. As the first of the spring flowers bloomed, I tried to forget the painful memory of the jeans. It helped that I had Hank and Lupe to distract me. And the mailman. Every time he came, I thought about the contest. I thought, this is it. Today's the day. My life's going to change. But the letter from Vermont did not arrive. Other unexpected news did arrive, though, which completely shook up our world. Mr. Yao was selling the motel. My parents' faces turned white. The temperature in the room plummeted as Mr. Yao told them the news. A real estate deal for him in Nevada had gone bad, and he needed a cash injection.
So what does that mean for us? My parents asked him.
You?
Mr. Yao asked. He snorted, like we hadn't occurred to him at all. Then he shrugged.
Depends on what the new owner wants to do with you.
He said it like we were inventory, freely disposable, along with the washer and dryer. Lupe told me not to worry. Motels weren't like houses. They took ages to sell.
There's a whole inspection process and everything, she said. I'm sure you guys are going to be out of here before Mr. Yao even finds a buyer. Have you told your parents about the essay contest yet?
No, I said. I didn't know what it was about me and secrets. Once I had one, I just couldn't let it go. I would feed it and snuggle it, and it would grow and grow inside me until it took on a life all its own. So no, I hadn't told my parents. I'd been too busy imagining the look of surprise on their face to actually surprise them.
They're going to freak when you win, Lupe said with a smile.
My parents did freak, but not over my winning the contest. They were freaking out over who the new motel owner was going to be.
Oh, God, what if he hates Chinese people? My mother asked, biting down on her nail.
Or if he wants to run it himself? My father said.
Should we look for another job? My mom asked. What should we do?
My parents paced the living room, fretting and panicking while I sat quietly in the corner. That was the problem with keeping a secret. You are all alone on your own little island.
Have you ever thought about how nice it would be if we owned the motel? I asked.
I just kind of threw it out there. My dad laughed.
That would be nice, he said.
He looked into the distance and let himself imagine, for a second.
We wouldn't have to work every single day. We can take Sundays off, together as a family.
We could all go swimming, my mom added. I'd love to jump in that pool.
Me too, I said.
I'd love to get some sleep, my dad said. If we owned the motel, I could put up a sign that says, "Sorry, I'm sleeping. Come back in the morning."
A smile played at his lips as he pictured how extraordinary life would be if he could sleep through the night. Then his smile faded and reality set in.
Maybe in another life, he said, picking up his broom.
I shook my head. No, Dad, not in another life, I said. In this life. Our eyes locked. A second passed, and then another. And then I whispered my secret. Chapter 56. They didn't say a word at first. I thought perhaps they were too shocked. Sometimes when I'm too shocked, I can't speak either. That's why I write things down, and even then, sometimes I can't bring myself to deliver them. Like my thank you letter to Jason, which was just sitting there at the bottom of my backpack. I thought maybe my parents were just taking their time, too. Taking their time to find the right words. But then I looked up and saw my mother's disappointment.
You're not going to win, she said.
Her voice was certain, positive. She looked right at me, her eyes a mixture of pain and sadness, but not sad like, I'm sad you're not going to win, sad like, I'm sad you actually thought you could win. I wanted to grab her and shake her.
You're wrong, Mom! I'm not a bike, you'll see!
I yelled. My mom put her hands on my arms.
No, honey, she said. I mean, those sweepstakes are all rigged.
The news slapped me across the face. For a second, I was fully blind, and then I flat out denied it.
It's not rigged.
No, of course not, my dad jumped in.
But just think about it. Why would they just give away a motel like that?
My mother asked.
Because they're old, I said. They don't care about the money. They're doing it out of the goodness of their heart.
Have you ever seen anybody in this country do something out of the goodness of their heart?
The doctor who fixed you up, remember him?
My mother's face softened. She didn't talk about the contest being rigged after that. Still, the doubt lingered with me. What if she was right? Chapter 57. Mr. Yao came over the next day, poring over the numbers and figures in the big ledger with an intensity I'd never seen before. He took over the entire front desk, making calls and pounding so madly on the calculator, I thought it might break. I didn't really want to be in the same room with him after what happened with the jeans, but I stayed behind so I could put the blue baseball cap on the table. Mr. Yao looked up from the ledger. He pointed at the blue baseball cap.
That used to be the old manager's, he said.
I didn't say anything. I didn't feel like talking to Mr. Yao, and especially not about the hat.
His name was Yefei, but he called himself Jerry, he continued.
He picked the hat up and chuckled to himself.
I remember when he got this hat. He didn't even know what the Yankees were.
So why'd he get it? I wondered out loud, instantly frowning because I'd broken my vow never to talk to Mr. Yao again.
Darn.
He liked the way the Y looked. His name starts with Y, he said.
Mr. Yao put the cap back on the desk and looked into the distance.
He was a good guy, that Ye. Very hard worker.
Wait, what? Had I heard that right?
The two before him, totally useless. Incompetence doesn't even cut it. They couldn't do a single thing without calling me, he said, shaking his head.
How many managers have you had? I asked him.
Oh, I don't know. I don't count these things.
And we were back. These things.
But he was a good one, that year.
I wondered for a second how Mr. Yao would talk about us after we left for Vermont. How would he take the news?
Sooner or later, they all leave,
Mr. Yao answered with a sigh, as if he had read my thoughts. Maybe if he was nicer to them, they wouldn't leave, I thought. As I gazed at Mr. Yao, his face hardened by all the years and managers who had come and gone, I wondered what young Mr. Yao was like when he first started out. Was he less of a jerk or the same? I wished I could ask him. The phone disrupted my thoughts. Mr. Yao grabbed it, and in an instant he was back to his usual no-nonsense, you're only as good as your last envelope, self.
Bobby, no, listen, I'll get you the money, he said into the phone,
waving me away to give him some privacy. I went into my room and replayed what Mr. Yao said about the old manager in my head. A part of me hoped he would say good things about us after we left, even if he never said them to us. The next week, the letter I'd been waiting for arrived. I held it in my trembling hands, staring and staring at the words, Vermont Motel Giveaway Committee, terrified of what it might contain.
Hank! I shouted, it's here!
As the Weekleys and my parents piled into the manager's quarters, Hank stood up and cleared his throat.
Everyone, I think that we can all agree that little Mia here has changed our lives, each and every one of us in this room, Hank said.
Heads nodded. Hear, hear, Billy Bob said. Mrs. Q reached over and gave my hand a squeeze.
Well, now it's her turn. Today, our girl's life is going to change. And it's about time, I say,
Hank exclaimed.
Woo! Fred cheered.
Hank took his glass of cream soda and held it up.
To Mia.
Everyone held up their glasses. To Mia, the room boomed. I looked around the room, the corners of my eyes wet with gratitude. Love welled inside me as I smiled back at the Weeklies. Here we were, strangers from all corners of the world, blown to the Cala Vista by the winds of life, only to find each other and reemerge as a new family.
Thank you guys so much, I said.
I thought about how much I was going to miss the Weeklies in Vermont, especially Hank. A lump formed in my throat. Hank pointed at the envelope in my hand.
May I do the honor? He asked me.
I nodded. He took the envelope from me.
This is it, people.
Hank rubbed his hands together. We all held our breaths as Hank opened the envelope. My heart raced so hard, I thought it might come flying out. As Hank unfolded the letter, my mother put her fist to her teeth, her knuckles the color of porcelain. My father's knees were on the floor, his hands folded together, eyes on the ceiling.
Thank you for applying for the Vermont Motel giveaway, Hank read. We've read every single entry over very carefully, and we regret to inform you.
Hank's smile vanished.
What? What is it?
I asked. Hank put the letter down, and I knew. Chapter 58. We sat in silence, the hot tears pooling in my eyes, Billy Bob's hands balling into fists, and Mrs. Q shaking her head, blinking hard, blowing her nose into a tissue like someone had died. Because in a way, that's what it felt like. Our dream had died.
This is bull,
Hank yelled. He looked madder than I'd ever seen him before, madder even than when he threw that drunk guy out.
It's okay, I said softly.
No, it's not okay, he bellowed.
He got up and walked across the room.
How could they do this?
Maybe what I wrote just wasn't...
The lump in my throat became a boulder.
Just wasn't good.
They slithered in like eels. You're a bike. The other kids are cars. You'll never be as good as the white kids in their language. I tried to stop it, but it was no use. Doubt came in through every pore.
Hank shook his head. You know what? I'll bet the whole thing's a scam, Hank said. They're probably not even giving away a motel. They just wanted the money. Probably thought $300 is nothing to people. They didn't know you sold your lucky pennies.
My dad's face plunged.
You sold the lucky pennies?
He asked. He looked away immediately, but there was a second. A second in which I saw into him crystal clear. I saw his hope fade away.
We'll help you find new ones, Hank said, looking around at the other weeklies. We'll all look, won't we?
The weeklies instantly started digging into their pockets for loose change.
No, it's fine, my dad said. I'm fine.
Later that night, the weeklies went back to their rooms, and I sat with an emptiness that was almost unbearable. I went out the back to look for my dad. I found him sitting by himself in the laundry room.
Hey, Dad, I said.
He looked up at me, his eyes pink and moist, like he'd been crying.
Hey, sweetheart, he said.
He quickly dabbed his eyes with the towels.
I'm sorry I sold our lucky pennies, I said to him.
I told myself I wasn't going to cry, but the tears came anyway. My father pulled me into his arms.
Hey, no, it's okay. You win some and you lose some, he said, kissing the top of my head.
But I always lose some.
My dad looked down at me and wiped a tear away, too.
That's not true, he said.
Because of you, Uncle Zhang's now free. Hank has a new job. I'd call that a win.
But I really wanted to win for us this time, I muttered.
My dad rocked me in his arms.
I know you did, sweetheart, he said, his voice shaking. I know you did.
Chapter 59. So that's it. I'm not going, I told Lu Bei at school the next day.
I can't believe this, she said. Did they say who won?
I shook my head.
I bet it was their cousin or their son or something stupid like that, she said. It couldn't have been your essay. I read your essay. It was so good.
It felt good to hear her say that, although a part of me still wasn't sure. We were sitting on the grass in PE, way out in left field, avoiding the ball and any chance of injury, as usual. Lu Bei picked a blade of grass and twirled it around her finger.
You know, I'm kind of glad you're not going, she said.
So you don't have to stay with Jason all by yourself? I asked, squinting at her in the sun.
So I don't have to stay on the roller coaster all by myself, she whispered.
It occurred to me at that moment what it would have been like for Lu Bei if I had left. I always thought I was the one who needed her, that I was the barnacle to her whale. But it wasn't one way. We needed each other, me and Lu Bei. She had been trying to tell me this all along, but it never really hit me until now.
Well, you don't have to worry, I said.
I'm not going anywhere. Lu Bei smiled at me. I'll be on the roller coaster for a long, long time, I said. Lu Bei shook her head.
Nope, you're not. You're getting off, she said. We're both getting off, together.
She put her hand on top of mine, and I looked down at our two hands on the grass. Later that day, after we had filed back into class, Mrs. Douglas turned to us and clapped our signal. As everyone sat up in their seats and listened up, she turned to me.
Mia, will you please come up to the front of the class? Mrs. Douglas asked.
I glanced worriedly at Lu Bei as I got up and walked over.
Now, class, you all remember the stories I asked you to write a while back about a small moment in your life?
Mrs. Douglas asked. My heart jumped to my throat.
Mia here wrote about what it was like to come to America on an airplane, she said. Anyway, the other fifth grade teachers and I got together, and we read everyone's story, and we all agree that Mia's story... She paused for what felt like an eternity. I squeezed my eyes shut. Is absolutely wonderful. My jaw dropped. Mrs. Douglas handed me my story. Mia, will you please read your story to the rest of the class? I blinked at Mrs. Douglas, waiting for her to say, Oh, wait, there's been a mistake. Was this going to be like the chocolate notebook again? I told myself. Don't. Do not feel warm and fuzzy. Not yet. But then I snuck a peek down at my paper. There were red marks all over it, just like the last time, and lots of exclamation marks. But they didn't scream, Bad grammar! In shouty caps. They said things like, Moved me to tears! And, Oh, Mia, this is incredible! Go on, Mrs. Douglas said. Read your story to the class. Right now? I asked. Mrs. Douglas nodded. With trembling hands, I took it from her and slowly began to read. As I read, my voice wavered. My throat was prickly, my lips dry. Still, I pushed forward in my tiny voice. When I finished reading, the whole room was silent. Everyone's eyes were on me. I stood so still. If a breeze swept through the classroom, I would have fallen. And then, amid the deafening silence, I heard a sound. The sound of clapping. I looked up to see Lupe clapping. A few kids joined her, and soon almost everyone in the room was clapping, even Jason Yao. I felt my throat pinch with emotion. That was beautiful, Mrs. Douglas said. I looked up at the swelling pride in her face and instantly forgave her for giving away my sparkly pencil. Thank you, Mrs. Douglas, I said, and started going back to my seat. Wait, Mrs. Douglas said. I have something for you. She reached inside her desk and pulled out a small piece of paper, which she handed to me. I peered at the words Pizza Hut written on it. Two free pizzas at Pizza Hut for you and a friend, she said. I looked up at Mrs. Douglas. I looked into her eyes. Are you sure? Are you sure there hasn't been a mistake? When enough time passed and I was finally sure she wasn't going to take it away, I looked over at Lupe. Her eyes sparkled with excitement. Chapter 60 Mom! I raced up the stairs two at a time. My parents were in the middle of cleaning room 22. My mother was holding Windex in one hand and Lysol in the other. Mom! Dad! Guess what? I won a writing contest at school! I exclaimed. Are you serious? My mom asked. When did this happen? Today, I said, handing her my coupon to Pizza Hut. My dad beamed. He put the vacuum cleaner down, took me into his arms, and spun me around. What did I tell you? You win some, and you lose some, he exclaimed. I grinned. Lupe's coming over, I said to my mom. Will you take us to Pizza Hut? Will I ever, my mom said, tossing her Lysol and Windex to the side. I laughed. Ever since I could remember, my mom had been asking my dad to take her out to eat, but of course, we could never afford it. And now, we could finally go. We didn't even need to carry a fake shopping bag. The pizza at Pizza Hut was bubbling hot. My mouth watered before I even tasted it, just from the smell wafting toward us from the kitchen. Lupe dug into hers, smiling as she devoured the cheese. This is so good, Lupe said. I put a slice onto my mom's plate. She took a bite and purred. It was almost enough just watching the two of them. I was so happy. I looked around the room, thinking of all the times I'd walked by this place, peering through the windows, wondering what it was like to sit in one of the booths. Mia, you gotta taste this! My mom pointed to my slice. I took a bite and felt the soft dough melt in my mouth. I'd had pizza before at school, but not like this. I closed my eyes, savoring every morsel of cheese and pepperoni. It was heavenly. My mother looked at me and said, I'm so proud of you. Not bad for a bicycle, right? I asked with a grin. I couldn't resist. My mom put the pizza down and turned to me. You're not a bicycle, she said. The truth is, I'm the bicycle. Mom, you're not... Yes, I am. You see how my English is. My English is terrible.
I thought about the stupid woman who made fun of my mom's pronunciation.
So you say eggplant, eggplant. Who cares?
My mom shook her head.
It's not only that. It's everything.
She looked down at the ground, then back up at me.
Math, I could help you with, but Mia, I cannot help you with English.
I finally understood why my mother had been saying all these things. She didn't want to hurt me. She wanted to help me. And she couldn't with English. That's why she was constantly pushing me to do math. I wanted to say to her, Mom, have faith in me. I can do it on my own. I figured the front desk out on my own, didn't I?
Don't worry, Mom, I said to her. You don't have to always help me. I can do it.
My mom didn't say anything for a long time. Then she smiled.
Clearly, you can, she said.
That afternoon, as we inhaled slice after slice of deliciousness, my mom asked Lupe about her family in Mexico.
We left when I was very little, and I don't get to see them very often, Lupe said.
Why don't you guys go back and visit? I mean, since it's so close, I said. I would go back every day if China were right there. Lupe shrugged.
My mom says every time we go, we have to buy so many presents for everyone. I have 11 cousins, and that's just on my mom's side, Lupe said. On my dad's side, I have, let's see.
Lupe counted on her fingers.
7, she announced.
You must miss them so much, my mom said, glancing at me.
Sometimes, she said. But they all think America's this super rich place where everyone just plays golf all day and drives around in a Cadillac.
My mother laughed.
It's the same with my siblings, my mom said. I think they get that from the movies.
Lupe sighed.
I wish there was a movie that told them what it's really like, Lupe said.
My mom shook her head.
No way, my mom said. That would be so embarrassing.
Lupe reached for another slice.
This is really nice, by the way, Lupe said, looking at me. Thanks for inviting me.
I smiled back at her. There was nobody in the world I'd rather share this with. Well, except.
Hey, should we save some for Dad? I asked.
I bet he'd never tasted anything like this before. Real pizza, not the frozen kind from the grocery store. Against our stomachs, loud protests, I put my slice down and so did my mother. She raised her hand for a to-go box. Back at the motel, we found my dad in the kitchen making himself some rice with cabbage.
Forget the cabbage, my mom said with a smile as she handed him the pizza box. Look what your daughter brought you.
My dad huffed and puffed about how we didn't have to do that, but I could tell he was secretly glad we did.
As he bit into the pizza, he closed his eyes and moaned. Chapter 61.
The kind people at Pizza Hut let me keep my coupon as a souvenir. Carefully, I taped it up next to the front desk so I could look at it every day while I worked. I wished I could tell my cousin Shen about it. The whole time Lupe was talking about her cousins in Mexico, I was thinking about Shen. There was this restaurant that Shen and I would always walk by on our way to school. It was a fancy Western restaurant, the only one in town, and naturally, it was way too expensive. Every time we walked by it, Shen and I would talk about what it'd be like to one day go in there when we grew up and order whatever we want. If Shen knew that today I'd gone to Pizza Hut, and for free, too, he'd be so proud of me. I smiled at the thought. I pulled out a piece of paper and started writing him a letter. If my mom didn't want to tell his mom anything about her, fine, but I just had to tell Shen. It had been a while since I last wrote. The last letter was before we started working for Mr. Yao. I wrote quickly, scribbling away about Lupe and Hank and Mr. Yao. I wrote about the car theft and the crazy security guard and freeing Uncle Zhang. I wrote about school and Jason, who wasn't quite so bad anymore, even though he still had my pencil. I told him about the essay contest and how I didn't win, but that Lupe and I were going to figure out another way to get off the roller coaster together. Finally, I told him about Mrs. Douglas and my writing, how it had gone from 12 exclamation marks bad to 4 exclamation marks good.
I even drew a picture of the Pizza Hut coupon so he could see for himself. In my neatest handwriting, I copied down all the words on the coupon, including the little expiration date at the bottom so he would know exactly what it looked like. I was nearly done when the mailman came.
"Can you just wait a second?" I begged the mailman. "I want to mail this letter to my cousin in China, and I just need to get the address from my parents. It'll just take a second."
"Did you say China?" he asked. He poked around in his big sack of letters and produced an envelope. "Looks like you just got something from there today."
I peered at the letter in his hands. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw the addressee. It was from Shen.
"Thank you so much," I told the mailman.
I was so excited, I forgot all about mailing my own letter to Shen and tore open his letter to me. The mailman chuckled as he left. It was a very long letter, 5 pages long to be exact. It was extremely detailed, and Shen even separated it into sections. There was a section on school, a section on neighborhood, and a section on our family. Typical him, he was always super organized. I raced through the letter, gulping it down as quickly as I could. I giggled at Shen's description of his new teacher, Mr. Wong, and how he couldn't sneeze without farting at the same time. He told me all about the new kids at his school, many of whom were from the outskirts of the city. The entire neighborhood was changing. All throughout the city, people were starting to buy up property. The government was tearing down the old brick buildings to make room for new high-rises. When I got to the section on family, though, my eyes did a double take.
"We recently moved to an apartment by the river because it's bigger. After you guys left, my dad was made head of department at his job. Long story short, the job came with a much bigger apartment. I no longer have to share with my parents. Now I have my own room. Oh, and we also got a car. Nothing like what you guys have in America, I'm sure, but it's pretty great. Last weekend, we went to Beijing and walked around the Great Wall. We had lunch at a brand new Peking duck restaurant. It was really fancy. Do they have Peking duck in America?"
Over and over, I read the words, new apartment, own room, car. I looked down at my own letter on the table, at my handwriting, which a minute ago looked neat and now looked puny. Slowly, I reread my words, how I'd gone on and on about the poor roller coaster in my pencil, my excitement of finally going to an American restaurant, how my stomach growled when I made myself put the pizza back so I could save some for my dad. The more I read, the more my fingers stiffened. Suddenly, I didn't feel like sending my letter anymore. With my hands heavy as rocks, I took my letter and Shen's letter and walked over to my closet. I stuffed them both way in the back, together with my C-minus story and the rejection letter from the essay contest. Was it true? Was Shen rich now? The wild thought bounced around in my head as I tossed and turned. My lips formed around the word, rich, rich. It was like a passcode to a different galaxy, and now Shen was part of the galaxy and I wasn't. Could it be that while our life had gotten so hard, his life had gotten so much easier? The thought was so painful to bear. I couldn't stand it. I rushed to lick my wounds. Shen may have his own room now, but I was pretty sure he still didn't have a bathroom with a shower. He still had to go to the neighborhood bathhouse. And his dad may have gotten a good job, but they'd still never flown in an airplane and never stayed in a hotel before. With every never, I felt my panic subside. Later, when I could finally breathe again, guilt cut into me like the harsh fluorescent front office lights. How could I feel this way about my own cousin? He was family. If he was doing well, I should be happy for him. I should be proud of him, because after all, if his family was rich now, didn't that mean... I sat up in bed.
Mom!
Chapter 62. My parents thought it was a joke.
"You want your aunt to buy the Cala Vista?"
They burst out laughing.
"Why not?"
I asked. I showed them Shen's letter, the part about how everyone in the city was starting to buy up property.
"They're not going to buy a motel," my dad said.
"Fine, they don't have to buy it, but they can lend us the money. We can buy it, and we could run it with Lupe and her family," I said.
"They don't have that kind of money," my dad said. "If they did, they wouldn't be in China."
"Well, it doesn't hurt to ask,"
I said.
No way. My mom screwed up her face. I'm not going to ask my sister for money.
Sometimes when my parents got like this, I really wanted to spray them with all-purpose cleaner.
Don't you guys want to get off the roller coaster? I asked. Mr. Yao wants to sell the motel. I heard him on the phone. He's desperate. Aunt Julie has money now. We could buy the motel. Don't you see what a huge opportunity this is?
No, my mom didn't see.
I see your heads in the clouds, is what I see, my mom said flatly.
Hank found me later that afternoon, sitting at the back of the stairs.
Why so blue? He asked, taking a seat.
I shrugged.
You still thinking about your lucky pennies?
I shook my head. I wasn't thinking about those lucky pennies. I was thinking about this one, the humongous penny staring us in the face. It was called family, and my parents refused to pick it up. When I told Hank, he got up, patted my head, and said,
Don't worry. Leave it to me.
He walked up to where my parents' maid cart was, and I followed him. My parents were in room 13 cleaning. Hank walked in and sat down on the bed.
You know, it's a funny thing, pride, Hank said to my parents. It stopped me many times in my life.
Hank glanced at me and added,
And I'm not just talking about my reference letter.
My mom put her broom down and wiped the sweat off her forehead. She sat down on the bed next to Hank. Hank took a deep breath and gazed outside in the general direction of the pool.
I'm talking about when I was young,
he sighed.
When I was 6, I wanted to be a swimmer. I just loved watching swimming on TV. There wasn't a pool in my neighborhood, so I would walk 5 miles to the Y over in the next town to go swimming. And I got pretty good. In high school, I tried out for the swim team. And you know what? I made it, too. I made it onto the team.
I smiled. So then what happened? I asked. Hank grimaced. He told us about the other kids on the team and how they kept making fun of him.
They kept saying stuff like, the basketball court's that way, and why are you putting on sunscreen? You don't need sunscreen. Stuff like that.
He shook his head. I reached over and put my hand over his.
I thought I would show them in the water, you know, show them how fast I was. That'll shut them up. But the day of the big meet came, and guess what?
What? I asked.
I was dead last. It wasn't even close. So you know what I did?
What?
I quit. Just walked down out and never came back, he said.
Good for you, my mom said. You're better off without them.
See, that's what I used to think. But now you know what I think. I think if it were Mia, she wouldn't have quit. She wouldn't have let those punks take away her dream. She would have worked hard and gotten better. So what if you lose the first race? You get back in there and keep swimming. And you know something? She would have been right.
I thought back to all the times Hank walked by the pool, how he always stopped and stared at it, his mind a million miles away. Hank turned back to my parents.
The point I'm trying to make is, you can't let a useless thing like pride get in the way of your dreams,
Hank said.
That's what I realized this year.
Hank pointed at me.
Now, you've got a very special little girl here. You owe it to her to swallow your pride,
he said.
I've been around long enough to know there aren't many chances in life for our lot to change our luck. And this is it. You're staring at it. Yao's dying to sell the motel.
But it's not that simple. I've been lying to my sisters about how great our life here is, my mom confessed.
So tell them the truth. No skin off your back, Hank said.
My mom looked hesitantly at my dad.
Hank's got a point, my dad said.
Please, Mom, I added. My mother peered into my eyes. Hesitation melted into resolve. Slowly, she stretched out her hand.
Give me the phone, my mom said.
We all crowded around my mother as she picked up the phone in the room and dialed international for my aunt, a number she knew by heart, yet never used. My father looked at his watch.
What time is it over there? He wondered. Probably 9, 10 in the morning?
We waited and waited while it rang. Finally, on the 5th ring, my aunt picked up.
Julie?
My mother said in her rapid-fire Chinese. It's Ying. My mother's face lit up when she heard her sister's voice. I guess all the lies in the world couldn't pull two sisters apart.
We're doing great,
my mom said. Everything's fine. Just terrific.
Uh-oh. I could feel her Macy's voice coming on.
Listen, the reason I called is I have an opportunity for you, my mom said. My mom glanced hesitantly at my dad, who nodded. Go on. How would you like to invest in some American property?
A pause.
Yeah, I said American property, my mother repeated. Not just any property, a motel. See, the owner of our motel, Mr. Yao, is selling his motel. And I just thought...
I could hear my aunt's animated voice on the other line, but I couldn't make out what she was saying.
No, you wouldn't have to run it. We could run it for you. It's a real cash cow, this motel, my mom said. A wonderful opportunity.
My mom's face fell.
I see.
I could tell from the look on my mom's face, my aunt wasn't going for it. My mom held her hand over the receiver and whispered to us,
She says they're saving up to buy an apartment in Beijing for Shen.
An apartment for Shen? Shen's only 10!
No, of course, I understand. But listen, you don't have to put in a lot. You could ask Qing, Lan, Biming. You could ask the whole neighborhood. Everybody could each put in a little.
Qin, Lan, and Biming were my mom's other siblings. My mom frowned.
Oh, they want to buy an apartment in Beijing too, huh? She said.
My mom shifted her weight from one foot to the other. I could tell she was ready to give up, and I poked her.
No.
My mom looked over at us.
Tell her,
my dad mouthed.
Okay, listen. She sighed into the phone. The truth is, we're really struggling here.
Slowly, my mom put aside her Macy's voice and told my aunt the truth.
So, I'm asking, my mom said at last, her voice shaking, will you help us, sis?
There was a long pause at the other end of the line, during which my mom, Hank, and I all held our breaths. As my aunt delivered her verdict, my mom sank onto the bed. Chapter 63. My mother was inconsolable that night. She couldn't believe that her sister would rather buy a fancy penthouse in Beijing than help her own sibling. As she buried her head into her pillow, my father tried his best to comfort her.
I can't believe she said no,
my mom said to my dad. I couldn't either. Never in a million years did I think my aunt would say no, not after my mom told her what we were going through. I guess a lot had changed since we left. Not just the neighborhood, but the people too. They were probably splitting the bill now.
It's okay, my dad said. We tried. You heard what Hank said. It's no skin off our back.
It is, my mom cried. It's the skin and the hair and everything.
I bit my lip as I listened from my bed.
Now we'll just be employees for the rest of our lives, working for one bastard after another.
Not everyone can lead, Ying, my dad said. Some people are just destined to be followers.
As my father started going on about our fate again, I threw my head back down onto the pillow. I didn't believe we were destined to be followers. I didn't believe we were just supposed to stay on the roller coaster forever. I thought about all the people I'd met this year and how we all deserved better. Lupe, Hank, the other weeklies, and all the immigrants. So many wonderful people from so many different parts of the world. If only there was a way we could join together and break free. Wait a minute. What if we didn't need one rich relative? What if what we needed instead was a lot of poor people? My mother said it herself. Everybody could each put in a little.
Lupe came straight over the next day and squealed when I told her my plan.
Of course. Why didn't we think of this earlier? Mr. Yao desperately wants to sell the motel. We could probably get it for cheap.
She grabbed my hand and we ran out the back to find Hank. It was a Saturday and Hank was outside his room watering his tomato plant.
How much do you think Mr. Yao wants for the motel? We asked him.
Hank stopped watering and drew a sharp breath.
At least $300,000, I'd say. Why? Did you guys find another rich relative?
No, we were all out of those. But we knew a lot of people. Sure, they were all poor, but
If everybody put in a little. And it wouldn't be a donation. It'd be an investment. We'd own the motel together, I told Hank. I pulled out my notebook and showed him and Lupe my calculations. Their eyes boggled when they saw the math. This place